The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Are we going to put these tough topics down for a bit? We have an interview last week, Thursday. A gentleman joined us in studio. And we had a pretty robust discussion about insurance, president of TAIFA. And of course, it's Insurance Month. He joins us again this morning. We have another interesting topic for you this morning. And this morning, we're discussing the future of the insurance industry. As important as that may be, we'll get into the details. Let's welcome back to our program here this morning, President of TAIFA, Mr. Larry Taichu. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Satish, and good morning to our listeners this morning.
Nice to have you back with us here this morning. There were a number of questions. People were very much involved in the last discussion we had.
Yeah.
You can tell. You gave us some information that opened raised a lot of eyebrows mm-hmm. about where we are as a nation when it comes to our insurability, the number of people who are insured, who need to be insured, and all those things. And we'll get into some more of them. As with any industry, the insurance industry faces its ups and downs.
Yes.
And as we are into Insurance Month, which is what TAIFA has been speaking about and you've been speaking to us about, people will ask the obvious question. So, how stable is the insurance industry at this point in time, given these financial challenges that we hear all over the place? What's the future for insurance, and should I get involved? Meaning, should I take out a policy? No, should I sit down and wait and see if this thing going on crash, as some people say, and everything else? It may seem to you to be a discussion that is not warranted because you're involved. So you understand how strong the industry might be, but sometimes you need to explain it to people what's going on. So let's start with the future of the industry as from a stability standpoint. Should people be concerned, or is it much ado about nothing?
Well, I would first like to say that it is much to do about nothing. Being in this industry close to 30 years now, I remember in the early days there were at least 10 to 15 insurance companies operating in Trinidad and Tobago. And then someone said, many years ago still, around that time, they said that the industry is moving where it will be sifted, where there will be probably just about 5 major players, because companies will merge into companies and stuff. And so said, so done over the years, where the local industry has predominantly merged into 5 major insurers. They still have the odd ones here and there. Now, when I speak to 5 major insurers, I'm speaking to not that it is only 5, because there would be other smaller companies that probably outside of this 5 still operating in the area of providing general insurance services and not so much on both sides of the fence, being life and general. Out of those, if I remember right, of those major 5, there are 4 that are operating as publicly traded shareholding companies, where they publish their returns every quarter by law. And then there is 1 that is still privately owned, and a privately owned limited liability company is not obligated in law to publish their financials mm. because it's still a privately owned company. We have companies existing in Trinidad and Tobago whose history dates back 176 years, you know, evolving over that time into who they are today. So they were not probably originally known by company X, Y, or Z, but in their own internal evolution, if you track back the history when they first started operating in Trinidad and Tobago, it was in the 18th century. And I ended, I believe, last week's program by sharing that insurance, in thinking of it, its simplest form is like one giant susu. I don't know if you remember me mentioning that, right? And it's just a lot more scientific than just a susu hand, because then there are actuaries involved, knowing how to cost products and stuff involved. Those products cannot hit the market unless they go through a rigorous treatment by our regulator, Central Bank of Trinidad and Tobago, which goes through the details of those products before they are allowed to hit the public domain. Down to interest rates and stuff in certain types of products are governed by central bank, because a lot of people don't realize that, as an example, all insurance companies collect millions of dollars each year, and because of regulation, they are guided by where and how much they can invest in the local market and in the foreign market. I would have you all know that the majority of those investments are actually held in the local market as governed by our regulators. Yeah, and so while some people say, but you know, you could go here and you could go there and you could invest here and there, our industry is heavily regulated to protect John public, right? Because remember that insurance products and services, by and large, are long-term investments.
Mm.
Yeah, the only short-term aspect of a lot of insurance products and services is more in the general insurance lines, which are one-year renewable contracts. As an example, your car insurance. But things like life insurance and annuities and critical illness policies and of the like, they are predominantly long-term products. And so when a person comes into a program to protect themselves, their family, or the business, they are signing a contract, and the company is signing a contract with them, what we call a simple contract of offer and acceptance, that we are going to be here to be able to pay you at some time, whether in the short term, medium term, or long term, based on when the event happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And because you don't want to know that you spend your entire life, as an example, putting monies into an annuity program or what we call a pension plan. And then when you're old and you don't have the years or youth in your favor anymore, that a pension plan should crash. And where does that leave you with your life savings and stuff like that? So while some people sometimes speak against too much control, it's predominantly there to protect you, the general public. That includes me.
It's a discussion that has come to the fore because of pronouncements that were made some recently and because of some of the developments that we've had, and persons themselves evaluating the economy. And you're hearing everywhere you turn, you see a business closing its doors.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk through the malls, you walk through some of these shopping plazas, they're virtually empty.
Mm-hmm.
And so it speaks to the economy, it speaks to business and what's happening. And we have, in the very public domain, what happened with CL Financial and Clico. And many people were very concerned back then as to what would have happened to their investments. Those have been sorted out one way or the other. But it's still in the back of the mind that people will say, well, you know, I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
But what you've just said to us outlines in great detail how structured the entire system is and how, well, I don't know if those regulations were more enforced or become greater now as opposed to then. But I am positive that with what you're saying, there will be greater monitoring to try as best as possible to prevent persons from going through what they had to go through back then with the CL Financial entire experience and with some of these other companies closing their doors. But there's another element, and people say it all the time, you know, that with the economy as bad as it is and with persons not necessarily having the disposable income that they once had, How does that factor into the lifeblood of the insurance industry, which is new clients and generating premiums?
Yeah. So funny you should mention that, because remember that insurance companies are in existence for decades, some, as I said, over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
You could well imagine in that time span that there were recessions, not one, but multiple recessions. And at that time, a recession is a recession, forgetting the dollar value of the recession.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was sharing with someone recently that 20-something odd years ago, you could have purchased a home in a what you call an upper middle class area for 200 and something thousand, 300 and something thousand. Today, 20, 25 odd years later, you could add a zero to that figure. And you would find that a lot of all the companies would have gone through all these multiple recessions. And why do insurance companies, no matter what, still survive? It is said that when people are going through financial or countries going through an economic situation, if you think things are hard on the outside, it's more so that a family needs to protect themselves. Now, protecting themselves is very, how would I put it, subjective, based on the individual or the family, because how much is really subjective to one individual that is totally different to another individual. That being said, that if you think things are hard and bad things do happen to good people,
mm-hmm.
What would happen when something does happen and you are, your family who has to continue living is totally unprotected? Only within the last week, and I believe I may have shared last week, of two situations that recently came to my attention. One is one of a sudden taken away of a 39-year-old, left home perfectly healthy,
mm-hmm.
and before that day was done, he was in a hospital mortuary or in a private institution with a wife and three children. Yeah, and I'm not calling names, so it's very private, but it's a scenario that I'm painting that is real life, and it applies to anybody, literally anybody. And the wife had put something in place. The husband did not take action, and that was just about 3 months ago. And the last thing he ever thought was that he was not going home that day. Life has to continue going on for the wife and the three children, while the husband did not make much financial provision for them yet up to that point in time, because you could well imagine that a 30-something-year-old young man with a wife and a young family is still in what we call the building years of their family's financial situation.
Mm.
And not having anything in place, life must go on for the living. So insurance companies are there, and you will be very surprised to know. It's like saying that in good times or in bad, does banks, as an example of another form of financial institution, do they just cease to exist? No, they don't, because everybody have their roles. Credit unions have their roles, banking system have their roles, investment companies have their roles, and insurance companies have their role. Everybody have their role to play in a individual or family's financial portfolio. And to say one is better than the other, no, because you can't compare chalk with cheese. If you're comparing at all, you have to compare chalk with chalk, right? Let me give you an example, another real-life example. You might have an individual say that if I'm putting this $500 into this insurance policy, and 10 years down the road, if I had to surrender it, but wait, no, I put more than what I'm getting back, right? And if I had put the money in the bank, I would have more money, right? But I said, okay, let's use the example that you have provided. You mentioned $500 a month. That is 5 towards the 6,000 a year times 10 years, that is 60,000 plus some interest that the bank will give you, which is negligible. If something happened to you 10 years down the road, what would 60,000, 65,000 do for your family as compared to if you were putting, let's just say, $300 in the bank and you're taking $200 out of the same disposable $500 to insure yourself, to protect your family for, let's just say, depending on your age, let's just say $250,000. Now, if something had happened to you in this second scenario that I painted, while you would have had maybe about 30-something thousand in bank, you still could collect at least a $250,000 on the insurance side because they both serve different roles.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrong to say that best I put my money here or best I put my money there. I always tell people it's very simple. The day you choose not to protect your family via insurance is technically you are saying that if anything happens, I will self-insure. I will protect my own family. The question is, that's just talk. What have you done in a significant, substantial manner to protect your family? Because I said something last week. I said, an insurance is the only product invented by man that creates an immediate estate upon an event happening. And that event is either debt. If you died and you only paid 1 month's premium, and I shared an example of that happening to a 31-year-old last week, where after putting the insurance in place to cover the mortgage, and a young couple just getting into the first mortgage, the following month the husband died. And while the wife is grieving for her young husband, she just inherited a debt-free home, literally a debt-free home that was valued between $1.5 and $2 million, with only one premium being paid, right? What product does that? While I'm sure she would have loved to remain here for till old age with her husband, that they would see their grandchildren together, the thing is, bad things do happen to good people. The other event that creates an immediate estate, in this case, the estate that we're referring to is a lump sum cash, because we sell money at the price of pennies. We sell dollars at the price of pennies. So the other event is a living benefit. So that one is a dead benefit, which is never for you. It is your last love letter to your family. The other one is critical illness. All companies have a list of critical illnesses that the reinsurers have agreed to cover them for. No insurer covers 100% of risk themselves. You all would have heard the term reinsurance, because risk is spread among insurance companies, not only locally but globally, so that any one company, any one individual, any one country facing any form of catastrophe, for example, like a hurricane or earthquake, that risk is spread so wide that
you can survive it.
Everybody could survive it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And these nuances are, they sound rational. They sound as common sense as you can get. They sound as practical as you probably should be. But that seems to evade so many people.
They don't understand. You raise a point just now, Satish. You spoke of the CLECO issue, and while I'm not here to speak of any one company,
right,
what the public doesn't know is that the debt to the government over the last 10 odd years, when government took over the management of CLECO, when they used taxpayers' money to provide the liquidity to bail CLECO out, if you want to call it that, how much of the John public is aware that CLECO, in spite of the run on it and the loss of trust, right? How much of John public is aware that that debt more or less has been paid off? The public doesn't know that, all right? But I'm not here to get involved into politics or anything like that.
Yeah. The last time you were here, you spoke about taking action before something happens.
Proactively. Yeah.
And that's not something that many of us do. There are some of us who do it great. Yeah, there are some people who are meticulous in how they They plan every single thing that they are going to do. They plan the night before, they plan what their day is going to be. And these people are people who plan 5, 10, 15, 100 years into the future. They know exactly what's going to happen when. But there are many people who don't. And there are many people who, while all of this information is there, for whatever reason, don't take the action. I had an interview some time ago with a gentleman who recently passed away. And when we spoke on air and then we spoke off air, and I had asked him, I said, well, you know, this thing came on so suddenly. I'm curious, you know, what could happen to your family? And with tears in his eyes, he said to me that he does not know. And he is now in a situation, well, he was then in a situation where there was nothing he could have done about it. The diagnosis had been administered. It was too late for him. And this is a gentleman who has a very young child. And in speaking to him, he had so many regrets. But it's too late. He has passed on now. But it's too late. How do we get people to start to think about these things and to act? Because thinking about them is one. Acting is really where you need people to get to.
It is. It is. And I'd like to chime in there and say that. And that is why we say that insurance, by and large, is protecting the unknown risk, right? And while some risks are known, and insurance companies will assess those risks. So a risk that is known, as an example, is a person who is already diagnosed with diabetes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're wondering if they can still get insurance because I'm a diagnosed diabetic now, right? And so the insurance companies will assess those risks by finding out how controlled is it? What is the individual doing? So they may ask for current A1C reports based on, because the person is a diabetic, and they will ask for your medical records from your doctor, of which the insurance companies pays the doctor for those medical records. It's called a PMER, and they will assess. The underwriters have their guidelines that they will assess to see, okay, this person is still insurable, but insurable with a rating. In this case, a medical rating.
Mm-hmm.
Another person may be insurable with what we call an occupational rating, because, as I said last week, why should the person who is working on a rig offshore be paying the same exact premium of someone who's working in an office environment? So actuarial departments know very well how much to charge individuals. And I tell clients, I said, when you receive a rating, let's just say, as an example, a medical rating, right? And it's costing you more. First of all, some people say, well, I'm not taking it. I'll go and try somewhere else, right? And a lot of people are not aware that all insurance companies, by the sheer industry standards, they do have access to your medical records, right? From one insurer. So if you was rated in company X and you went to company Y and feel that you could withhold that information and not be found out, from the moment you submit that application with your information, it will flag,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can't hide. While some companies may choose to take the risk, and some companies, based on their own internal underwriting criteria, may choose not to. So just because you would postponed in one insurance company does mean that you will be postponed in another, right? Because companies have their own criteria of what level of risk they are prepared to accept,
right,
based on a premium.
Yeah. We need to take a couple of messages, but when we get back, I invite some of your calls. We have a gentleman here in studio who can answer any question that you would have, any concern, and this free people. Take the opportunity to call and ask your questions. I know that every time we have programs related to finances and some element of people preparing for their financial future one way or the other, there are a number of questions. So take advantage of the opportunity when we get back after these messages. 627-3223, 625-2257. We're speaking to the president of TIFA, That's Mr. Larry Taichu. Stay with us.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Our time, it's 12 minutes before 8. Got news for you at the top. And of course, with us in studio, President of TAIFA, Larry Taichu. We're discussing insurance, the insurance industry, and some of the things that we should know, some of the things we know already, some of the things we're learning for the very first time. And I've said to you all that, you know, for persons who have questions and there are issues probably that you need clarified for you, take the opportunity to call 627-3223, 625-2257 and get the answers that you're looking for. Somebody sent a message saying, great program on insurance. I take insurance premiums as a bill that I just pay, and once you treat it as such, you will not feel it. Another message, so, okay, let me read this one for you. Good morning from Aruka. I'm a 49-year-old male. Based on my executive medical checkup in August, I'm also healthy. I already have insurance policies for annuity and health. In listening to the program, I would like to get information about an insurance policy whereby my children will be the beneficiaries upon my death for whatever reason. I am able to start the policy, and he gave a lump sum. What would such a policy be referred to, and what could the monthly premium be should I pay it off? I'm looking for no less than $5 million. So he created a scenario there, and I'm not too sure if you could give him that kind of information on the air.
I can provide an answer, and what that answer would be is only yesterday a prospective recruit that I have in the selection process pose a similar question. You know, she gave a figure. She said, based on a person's age, how much would this tend to give? You know, and I said, first of all, I would say, push mash brakes right there. I said, no two individual scenarios may be the same, right? Because there are so many factors that come into play that causes the end result of what we call the premium. And those factors could be medical, those factors could be occupation, those factors could be a person's overall situation that now in the end affects coverage and premium. Mm-hmm. Now, in this gentleman's case, he was suggesting an amount that he would like to have, right? And so here's what affects that too. What about duration? Right? Does he want it a policy for $5 million that goes for his entire lifetime, living lifetime, you know, straight down to age 100, whatever age he should pass away at? Or does he want coverage, let's just say, to age 65 or age 75? Because all of that affects premium and coverage and cost, mm-hmm. right? Because the average person who buys insurance during, let's just say, their working life, where they have a mortgage, they have children, and they made the decision to purchase insurance because they want to know that if anything happens, the wife and children doesn't get put out of the house, or vice versa. Or you have a situation where debts are liquidated, children are still in school, right? And so you have one trend of thought of individuals that will say, well, when I get to retirement, let's just say it's 65, my mortgage is finished paying, my children are all grown and working, I may not need insurance, life insurance anymore. So you have that scenario playing against the other one that says, no, I don't want it to stop at any particular age, mm. right? So you find that when the actuaries have to cost those type of products, If they are costing a product that will end at age 65, then you're dealing with the mortality charge of that policy that the company is only going to be on risk to age 65, as compared to the other scenario where the company has to take into consideration the risk factor of mortality charges all the way till death, whenever that should occur,
mm-hmm.
right? So you see, that is why it's not as simple, and that this is why we say sit with a qualified trained advisor who will go through that discussion. And I like to put it this way. If any insurance sales intermediary approaches you for the first time, and already because they have a copy of your birth paper or your date of birth, and walk in with a projection to show you, that is the person to chase out of your house. Because if a recommendation of some insurance product or service has to arise out of a need that has been uncovered through a conversation that we tend to, I call it the discovery interview, then a recommendation is put together to meet that need. If you're meeting me for the very first time, how could you possibly walk with a recommendation in the form of an insurance policy? That person is really looking just to make a sale, to make a commission. They're mm-hmm. not concerned about what is really your risk exposure that you're trying to protect against.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. And I don't think people understand the scientific nature of determining what is required. Because you have, maybe because of persons with their own agendas, persons who would have gone in and tried to hustle a sale, as we say. And in trying to hustle a sale, gave the impression that, well, this is how the thing is done across the board. When it's not, let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Satish, and morning to your guest. I want to ask you, gentlemen, I have health insurance, critical illness. Well, at least I had it, because with a certain company, and while in the process of getting qualified, now I passed the health aspect of it, and so did my daughter. She's 22, 23. My wife was on this ketosis kind of diet fad that she had now started, and they were having problems qualifying her. Now, the health insurance was, I think, $11,000 a year, critical illness. And we paid $5,500 down, even before we were given the okay. Because my wife wanted the health insurance really bad. So what happened, the insurance agent didn't inform us, he didn't keep in contact with us. He came home, we signed a lot of documents, but long story short, he didn't answer, he didn't tell us if we got coverage, he didn't give us any feedback or anything like that. And then all of a sudden, when she tried to reclaim the $5,000 now, they told her that we were covered, and we didn't get any indication as to such. And I told her, just forget it. We tried calling the individual who came home by us a million and one times. He's not answering his phone. His secretary keep telling us that he's not available and whatnot, so we just forget about it. So right now, I am on the hunt for critical illness insurance. If you could give me a number where I can contact you. Also, I'm looking for insurance that when I pay the premium, I don't have to pay up front. I want to be presented with a card or some sort of identification where I present this to the health center or whoever it is, that the insurance company handles the cost at once. I'll listen off here.
Okay, let me take that call. So I heard you referring to two different points. One, you spoke of a health plan, And then in the same breath, you also use the word critical illness. Now, a lot of people, for example, purchase a critical illness policy, which is not a health plan. A critical illness policy just covers an individual for a list of certain number of specifically defined critical illnesses that upon diagnosis of that one of those critical illnesses that you meet the criteria and the claims department approves the claim, you collect a lump sum of money and the policy ceases to exist and you don't pay premiums anymore. All right? That is how a critical illness policy works. In one particular company, they don't use the word critical illness. They call it a dread disease rider. And then you refer to a health plan, which is like health plans that you would tend to have in your place of employment, which covers you for medical, dental, vision, and you referred to the use of a card. Well, some companies have gone beyond the use of a card, and now they have a barcode that you download on your smartphone. You flash it by the one of the providers, and usually all the health, private health centers and doctors and pharmacies are on the program, and they would scan your barcode, and you are only required to pay that percentage that institution or pharmacy or doctor or dentist or whoever will tell you how much you have to pay, and they will file the claim for the difference directly at the insurer. So gone are the days, but it's still available, where you pay the entire bill, fill out a claim form, submit it, and get back a portion with the breakdown of what you're entitled to. And I even know people whose claim was not settled at the point in time because it was missing. The form was incomplete, and they didn't have someone there to explain it to them that it's not a case of your claim being denied. It's a case of the doctors had forgotten to put certain information or provide a receipt. Yeah.
We need to take a break. News is next, ladies and gentlemen. When we get back for a couple minutes still, after 8, we'll have Mr. Taichu with us, taking more of your calls, dealing with some of your concerns, getting some more information as we discuss insurance, future of the insurance business in Trinidad and Tobago. Stay with us.
This is the Morning Rumble with Satish Mahabir.
Three and a half minutes, 4 minutes after 8. Into the final hour of our show here with us, still President of TAIFA, Larry Taichu. You were responding to a question when we had to take the break for the news. I'll allow you to continue.
Yes, so in completing the answer to the gentleman's question, so I won't assume it's, let's just say it was a health plan that he paid for, and he was paying it on a half yearly basis, because he mentioned 11,000 and paying 5,005 as a family premium, right? And so what the agent didn't tell him was the plan was actually approved and in place, right? That he didn't know about. And what he could have done is he could have gone into the customer service of the respective company, and if the plan is in place, the plan is in place, and maybe even ask a change of agent too if he found that he was not getting the service, because that is always available to a dissatisfied customer, because it had nothing to do with the insurer. It has to do with the particular individual, and that is why I say it's important to have a good relationship with this person who is going to journey with you, and not only with you, but probably even your children going down the road. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a couple of messages here. Let me read. What happens at maturity in a critical illness plan? Do you get back your premiums if no claims were made?
Right. So they remember that all companies' critical illness plans may be structured differently, right? There are some plans where they have what you call, if you never made a critical illness, right, that they have what you call a return of premium benefit. There are some companies whose critical illness policy may actually be an investment link product, And it's not just a return of premium, but whatever the cash value is at the point in time of not only maturity, but even surrender. Because people often ask me, Larry, what happens if I decided I didn't want this thing anymore? I said, well, everybody and anybody could surrender the policy and whatever the cash value is at that point in time. If it is a policy that has a cash component in it, you will just get that back as a tax-free lump sum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not a one answer, brush all,
right.
You know. It is dependent upon the individual product that you happen to have.
And I guess this is where personal responsibility is for you to ensure you know what you're getting and that it's fully explained to you. Because sometimes from the discussions that you have, you know, people talk in general, people say, well, I have insurance, but I ain't too sure what I have. And then when the time comes for somebody to make a claim, there are unrealistic expectations based on what they think they have as opposed to what they really are insured for. And that, in a great extent, fuels the distrust.
Yeah. You know, funny industry. You should say that because, for example, the gentleman was interchangeably using critical illness and then also using the word health insurance.
Right.
So you have some people who bought a critical illness policy which covers you only for certain defined critical illnesses that are listed on the contract.
Right.
And then they need a hysterectomy and they come into the insurance company thinking that they have a health plan,
mm-hmm.
which is two different things, you know, and vice versa. So it's really about before you sign for receiving any contract, that advisor is supposed to go through that contract with you and show you in black and white what mm-hmm. the things you have discussed before you sign off on receiving that contract. Otherwise, you don't have to accept it and your premium is 100% refundable.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, good morning.
Honest gentleman. What happened is that I would like to know if I could get insurance. I had a triple bypass about 5 years ago, right? And I had an accident where I lost the left hand about 23 years back. Am I in any, and I'm 64 years, I'll be in December. Am I in any position that I could get insurance here?
Okay, so let me take that question one time, right? I haven't spent so many years in this industry. In the early days when I didn't have the level of experience that I do today, I would think that someone who was diagnosed with a critical illness, in this case the gentleman had triple bypass, which required open heart surgery, which is one of the listed critical illnesses. And I, my thoughts in the past was if a person didn't have had such a situation that they were now uninsurable. Right, only to find out that that is not the case. Right, I'm not saying that he's insurable. I'm saying that when you submit an application for insurance, providing all the details, including medical records that they will ask you for and whatever else, even send you to possibly do tests.
Right.
Yeah, then the underwriter will make a decision if you can qualify and if this gentleman, for example, would have qualified, certainly you know that he would have been rated.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, right? In the past, I thought that a person who has a diagnosed critical illness, or not so much a diagnosed critical illness, but let's just say a person who was already diagnosed diabetic, that they could not get critical illness, and only to find out, one of my own clients,
mm-hmm.
who was a diagnosed diabetic, and because the readings were managed and the person's lifestyle habits was good and everything else, they actually got it, of course, with a rating, because why should they pay the same premium as a person who is not diabetic?
Mm-hmm.
The good part is that they did get it,
right.
You know. So it's not a painted picture. It's a case-by-case situation. And put it this way, if you were declined or if the case was postponed, the premium is 100% refundable. So did it cost you anything really to see if you could have gotten it?
Mm. There's another message. Let me read this one. There was a question I wanted to ask, but see if we have the time for it. Good morning. I wanted to ask your guest a quick question on insurance. As a medical practitioner, Many of us do not have a relationship with each person's insurance company, and we do not see a reason why we have to wait for months to get payment for our services when the insurance companies are dealing with their clients. This understandably causes stress on both sides of the fence. Is there any suggestion that your guests can make to clarify this? Because most of the doctors I know and surgeons that all my colleagues no longer want to accept insurance coverage from patients as a suitable reason to wait months for their payment. He's talking about delays.
Right. So his question is could be twofold because it's not fully clear. It could be on one hand where insurance agents send clients to have medicals done by providing the client with a authorization form to, let's just say, do a full med and stuff. And then there is the other side of the fence where, let's just say, they were on the preferred provider network where the client paid their portion and now they have the other portion that the provider, be it the doctor, be it the pharmacy, be it the medical institution, is claiming directly to the insurance company for. So here's my take on either one. You can always contact the insurance company, right? And there is the departments that deal with these things, and let them know that this is the monies that is outstanding, and I'm just following up on where it's at with regard to the processing of the payment. Yeah, because remember that insurance companies need to work with not only doctors, pharmacies, dentists, opticians, institutions. They want to have a good relationship with them. So if there's any snags along that way, then the insurance company is more than willing to try and remove those snags because they want that symbiotic relationship in working not only with medical doctors but with all the different facilities that mm-hmm. are provided, from a pharmacy to long-term medical center, as the case may be.
Yeah, so there's a lot involved, and I think the person is basic. They may have had one or two instances that led to this. And the explanation was welcome. We're almost out of time. I wanted to ask, and probably we may need to have another, as this is insurance month, we may probably need to have another session, but I wanted to explain, if we could, how an insurance agent and a client arrives at how much insurance somebody should get. I think that's an important thing for us to flesh out, because people, the average individual, wouldn't know. And they would trust an insurance agent to have their best interest. But if people have a clear, well, not necessarily a clear, but some kind of guideline as to how well, here now, I may want $10 million in insurance, but really and truly, I only need two. Or I probably don't even need $2 million based on what I have going on in my life. I need $500,000. How do I arrive at that figure? And that's a level of financial literacy that, as you said before, and we'll say again, that we don't really have as a people. But we're coming close to the end of our interview. I have another one starting at 8:20. As we wrap up, Mr. Taichu, if I were to tell you, like, to our listeners who are on the fence, they're hearing all this thing about insurance and all the pros and the cons and the negatives and everybody else in between, then all the voices coming at the same time and confusing them, what should they do to find some clarity in all the madness when it comes to whether or not they should get insurance?
Yeah. So let me start by saying that in every profession, in every career, you have good people and bad,
mm-hmm.
right? People who provide good service and people who doesn't, right? And that applies from the clerk you walk into a store to look for service to even in the medical profession, as the case may be. Because it's not just about providing a service, as we call bedside manners and things like that. All right. of that comes into play, right? Because sometimes people are not looking for perfect; they're looking for someone that they could relate to, and that relationship is a two-way relationship. And while we are don't have a crystal ball as to who is who, this is why we lean heavily. And clients should lean heavily on what we call a referral from someone that you do know that could vouch for maybe their particular insurance agent who has provided a level of service and a level of knowledge and care, because it's important that your advisor is not just someone who is there to sell you something, because you could do that without even an advisor. You could approach an insurance company and purchase directly, but then you're not sure if you're going to get good advice, right? Because you don't have someone really there walking you through. Do you know that not even the customer service department in all insurance companies can provide you with advice? Because to do so requires them to also hold a license by Central Bank, because Central Bank says that you are not allowed to give any insurance advice to a client unless you are a licensed insurance sales intermediary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I would say that one of at least the preferred ways would be the referral system of someone that you do know that could vouch for the person. But that's how we go to doctors. We probably was referred to the doctor because of someone we knew, the dentist. We didn't know which dentist to go to, and someone said, well, why don't you go and speak to my dentist, because I've been dealing with them for years,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. Yeah,
right.
And so it's a I wouldn't even want to say trial and error, because that's wrong. It's really use your referral system. Talk to somebody you know. Call the insurance companies, you know, and they let them refer you to someone that may be in a better geographic location to where you are,
mm-hmm.
that they could know that that person will be able to service you. Because if you're not getting the service that you want, you could go back to the insurance and say, this person that you all refer to me, X, Y, Z, A, B, and C. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. That's we're going to have to leave our interview here this morning. So thank you once again. Pretty interesting discussion. Very, very valuable information, because as we've been saying, sometimes we need that little extra encouragement to do the right thing for ourselves. And I hope that the conversation we had this morning encouraged people, educated them, hopefully, on some of the things, some of the do's, some of the don'ts, and that they make that decision that's going to be vital for them, their loved ones, moving forward. I want to thank you for being with us here this morning. I know that Insurance Month, there's a lot going on. You told us about some of that last week, and it was our pleasure having you on this morning again.
Thank you very much, Satish. Thank you to all your listeners. And we're here to provide any assistance that you can. Remember the website, www.ttaifa.com, taifa.com. And our lines are listed in the telephone book, so you can reach out. The head office is actually located at the top of Edward Street.
Yeah, so take advantage of the information, ladies and gentlemen.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.